Hi, I'm Brian Hart.
I'm Karen Holman.
And you're listening to
Cool Sheets.
In the coming half hour, you'll hear all about 10 things that we're currently enjoying and using in our lives.
Each of us has exactly 2 minutes to dive in and tell you about one of the things we've chosen.
It might be a book, an app, a gadget, a place, anything goes.
At the end of our 2 minutes, boom, time's up, and we go back and forth until we've shared 10 cool sheets with you.
Cool Sheets is all about fun, interesting, and or useful things to enhance your life.
We broadcast from our studios in Salem, Oregon on KMUZ Turner, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, or streaming online at kmuz.org every Sunday from 9 to 9:30 a.m.
Our website, coolsheets.cool, yes, that's coolsheets.cool, has info about all the cool sheets that we list every week if you want to find out more details about them.
You can also interact with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Here we go with this week's Cool Sheets. Hello, everyone. I am Karen Holman.
And I'm Brian Hart.
And
Mike Kemper joining in today.
Yeah.
Special guest. Okay, I get to go first. And I'm going to start out with a commuting resource. So this is something, you know, honestly, we almost always, we decided we should save the local things until last. And so generally we do this, but I'm doing this one first because I know that there are similar things all around the United States. And so wherever you live, whether it be Salem, Oregon, or elsewhere, look for something like this. So the one that I want to talk about, though, is called Get There Oregon. And it's gettthereoregon.org. And it is a carpool matching tool and a trip planner that will get you to really to anywhere you need to go, but you can set it up for carpooling. And that is what I did when I signed up and I went in to try to see what was up with carpooling. And this was really awesome. So you can use it not just to carpool, but also to van pool. You can use it to walk, to bike, and find other transit options. So it doesn't necessarily need to be used to match you with someone else who's going to where you need to go. But that is what I thought to be the most helpful for me personally. So this was made by the Oregon Department of Transportation. So ODOT put this together. And so what I found is that there's, and there's also a commute tracker app that Ride Amigos does, and you can use that to log your trips and things like that. So one thing I wanted to mention, so I don't forget it, is that October 7th, they are going to be starting a challenge that's going on for carpooling, for riding your bike and stuff like that. I know that a lot of companies do that through different venues, and there's another, I think, Portland-based huge thing. I'm forgetting what it's called. Brian, you might remember when we talk later. But they have their own. And so this is really great. Again, this is gettthereoregon.org.
Shoo, shoo. Nicely done.
Whew, I timed myself in a different manner, and it was
How did that? Do you want?
Well, you know, what was cool is it vibrated.
Oh, perfect!
At me, so I went, "Whoa, I'm done." I guess it didn't give me a warning, but that's cool. Did anyone shoo-shoo me?
I did.
Yeah.
Oh, yay!
Mike nailed it.
Whoa!
I was like taking the breath, and he already had it.
I was on it.
You are. You can be our shoo-shooer for the entire show.
The
how about that?
Show. Wow.
Or is that too much pressure?
I think I can handle it.
All right.
Well, even for myself.
Because with three, it does get
tricky. We're all kind of looking
at each
other.
That was the other rule, John Brown. He shoo-shooed his own.
Oh, he finished and then he went shoo-shoo.
Yeah, he's such a rebel.
That's hilarious.
I love you, John.
you can be the shoo-shooer for the shoo-show.
Oh.
I'm on it.
Like it? Yeah, this was cool. You know what was cool about this is it told me where other people were in my part of town and those that were commuting towards downtown.
Yeah.
And it did give first names, but it like didn't give addresses
or
anything.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I know.
That's a good stalker app.
I know. So you could, when you sign up, you could use an alias name if you wanted. And it just gives a general location. And then you can kind of go, huh. And you can say, I noticed some people said some women said they wanted to only commute with women. They felt more comfortable way. And so you can, you know, there's different things you can put in for it. So it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
Anything to ease up traffic, I'm down with it.
Yeah.
So exactly. I like it.
For sure. And just general planning, you know, like what buses go that way. And of course, you can go to in Salem, you can use the bus app, the Chariot app. But this might give you more like maybe combining different things, van pooling and bus or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Just more ways to go about it.
More options.
I like it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Mike, you are up.
Okay. My first cool sheet is the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival. This is an annual free and non-commercial music festival. It is held the first weekend of October in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park, which is awesome. It's a fabulous city, and Golden Gate Park is great. It runs Friday through Sunday. The festival was created and is still subsidized by a local venture capitalist, Warren Hellman, and it began in 2001, and it's been held every year since then. It initially started as the Strictly Bluegrass Festival, but several years in, he booked Emmylou Harris, who is doing sort of a New Orleans rhythm section type of sound at that time, and it gained in popularity with artists. So then he changed the name to Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival. And I really appreciate that this event is non-commercial. There's been numerous sponsors that have lined up that have wanted to get in on this. But it's nice because the festival goers, artists, they're just not bombarded by advertisements everywhere they go. So the focus is entirely on the music, as it should be. In 2011, there were 750,000 people that attended this three-day festival. So it's very large. This year, there's a very eclectic lineup, including Calexico, Iron and Wine, Tanya Tucker, Robert Plant and the Sensational Space Shifters, Fantastic Negrito, the Punch Brothers, and one of my favorite artists, Chuck Prophet and the Mission Express. And of course, Emmylou Harris will also be back. She's a mainstay of the festival these days. So check it out, the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival.
I got in there. Brian's eyes
now
got wide.
It's a contest.
I know.
It's the shoo-shoo fast draw.
That's awesome. So when did it start? What year?
2001. Is
oh, my gosh. I moved from San Francisco in 2000.
Oh.
And I lived a block and a half from Golden Gate Park.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. Wow. I used to ride I just went right there, and I could ride my bike the whole extent of it until my bike was stolen.
Oh. Hopefully you weren't on it at the time.
I was not.
That's good. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I get my bike stolen, at least I wasn't on it.
How often does bike jacking happen? I wonder.
Bike jacking? Oh, gosh.
Probably
more than we think. Maybe not in Salem. But.
Yeah. But going back to the topic at hand, I love that there's no commercial ism.
Yeah, that is just amazing that he's able to fund this, because it's got to be expensive just for the permits and security and paying all the artists that are there over 3 days.
Yeah.
So it's really incredible. And what a great location to have it.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it just his own money? How's he doing?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Some eccentric billionaire who loves music.
I want to be an eccentric billionaire.
The things that I could do. I'd have a festival every weekend if I was an eccentric billionaire. That's why
Let's
I'm
make
not.
That happen.
Yeah.
Wow. I would want it every other weekend so I could rest.
Yeah.
Well, if you're you don't have to do all the planning and stuff. You just sleep all week and then.
I know, but I would want to go to them all.
Yeah, but if you're sleeping for 5 days.
It's true.
Yeah. You could
get
do it.
Up.
You have this all planned out, don't you?
You have not really thought about the eccentric billionaire life. I have.
As much as Brian has.
Yeah. Every time I'm sleeping or not sleeping, I think about it.
Yes. Anyway, that's great. I love it. Good cool sheet.
Well, thank we you. Better move along a little bit, I guess.
Maybe.
We're 20 minutes in and we've had two cool sheets. That's
yeah,
good.
But that's actually perfect timing. We're in a good groove here.
All right. We are in a good groove.
Yeah. So what okay. do you got?
I have a video, and this video is called The King of Fish and Chips. And this is actually a New York Times op doc, which I have already had as a cool sheet. But this little short, it's like 9 or 10 minute little documentary about Salt Haddon, who started this fish and chips empire. So in the late 1960s, Haddon Salt built a fast food empire until Kentucky Fried Chicken came knocking. So that's kind of the tagline for the little film. It's produced or directed by Ben Proudfoot. And Haddon's father was a former coal miner. And then he opened up a fish and chip shop in England near a U.S. naval base during World War II. It was super popular. And when the war was over, all the troops were like, man, we're really going to miss this fish and chip shop. It was the only food that we actually liked here in England. You know, they have a reputation. And so he decided to start doing fish and chips in the United States. And it was huge. It was blowing up. He had up to 500 different franchises all over the United States. And then KFC was actually the biggest one. They were bigger than McDonald's at the time. And they did a deal. They came in. He was warned about how brutal they are. And he said, I want 12 times earning. And they walked out of the room. They just left. But then they came back and they made a deal. So he sold out for $12 million. And KFC kind of started cutting corners and the fish quality went down in the process, so they had a bigger profit margin and it just completely went away. And he talks about having his name on that franchise and what that meant to him. Even though he sold out, he knew it, but he kind of regrets some of that. Anyway, it's a great story. The King of Fish and Chips.
I'm sorry.
Force of habit.
Yeah, Karen wants
have
it. To yeah. be the one to do it every time.
It just kind of happened.
It's all right.
Yeah. Do you want to do one just because it...
Oh, that's a good one.
You did yeah. such a good job at that. That was awesome. Okay, now I'm hungry.
What I love, I didn't get my favorite quote of the whole video. Actually, this is in the article. There's also an article. For every icon, there are those who are almost famous, and perhaps they have even more than the conqueror. They have lessons that we need to hear. So this is so true. We always hear about the champions, the Ronald McDonald,
right.
and or the you know, and KFC and Colonel Sanders, and it's a fascinating story. But how many people had all that passion and drive and the family recipe like this guy had, and then it didn't work out? It happens way more often than the big giant success
story. So what was the name of the fish and chips?
It was called H. Salt Fish and Chips. Yeah. So it was just his name. Super simple. It was very UK garb inside. They wrapped the orders in a newspaper looking thing that had like the tube, routes and things like that.
Nice.
So it was very charming and everybody loved it. When they first opened, I mean, it was one of the hottest places to be, and having him reflect on that and how it kind of crumbled was very interesting.
Yeah. It makes me wonder about cases like that, if there's some way for him or someone else to pick up that name and to restart it. I just wonder if there's legal things.
Yeah, there's still some in Los Angeles, he said.
H-Salt?
Yeah.
Oh.
But he said they pretty much have nothing to do with his recipes, or he went there, and kind of ordered one. And in the beginning, he's so passionate about fish and chips. Like, you can just see it. He's beaming, and he talks about it, and he's just so lively. And they keep breaking. Yeah, I'm getting really hungry now, too. Breaking them open and eating them. Oh, it looks so good. And then he kind of goes there and orders, and he kind of breaks it open and eats one and has a look. But he also, he lives in a really nice house with a swimming pool.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not like, woe is me too much. He does admit, I sold out.
Yeah, right.
And I'm living pretty well for my entire life.
Yes.
You know, it's, that's why I like
anonymously it, now, too, because he's not like Harlan Sanders. People aren't going to point him out and go, oh, you're.
Right. And they used to whenever he said his name was Haddon Salt. Oh, are you the guy? Which is crazy. I never even heard of this place.
No.
And if it was big as KFC or any other fast food chain at the time, I mean, it was in the 60s.
What year did he sell out then?
I think it was still in the 60s, maybe late 60s, early 70s, something like that. I don't remember the exact date of sellout.
Did they ever have any in locations in Oregon?
I don't know. It does. And that's what I love about cool sheets like this is, now I want to dive in more. Were there one? Is there what's in that building now? All of those questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. My next one is a performance. Oh, I love this so much. Okay. So there are many facets to this. And one is that there is a musical artist. He is a multi-instrumentalist. His name is Vincent Fenton, but he goes by FKJ, which stands for French Kiwi Juice. He performs using synthesizers, loops, and his voice. He creates music that I would say falls into the genres of new jazz, electronic, and French house. His debut album was released in 2017, and he has already played quite a few large festivals like Lollapalooza and Lightning in a Bottle and many more. Okay, but this particular performance is amazing. In February of 2019, he played on the Salar de Uyuni. Sorry, I wanted to say that right. Uyuni. That is in Bolivia. Okay, so I want to say a little bit about this. Southwest Bolivia has this Salar de Uyuni, which is about 4,000 square miles in size. It is the world's largest salt flat. And it is so surreal. So during the rainy season, a layer of water covers its surface and it creates this mirror effect. So what happened was he performed just on this small, it almost looks like a raft, and set up all of his equipment. And there's a couple videographers and a couple drones. And he played for about an hour and a half right before sunset. And so not only are you hearing this awesome music, which he describes as a soundtrack to the landscape around him. So a lot of it he was just doing on the fly. Some of it was he did take songs that he already does. But he just plays for an hour and a half straight and you watch the sun go down. So then the lighting is changing throughout the duration of this. It was played live on Facebook, and then now it is available on YouTube, so you can listen and watch. It is beautiful, this performance by FKJ.
Shoo, shoo. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Do.
It sounds really interesting.
It sounds really, really cool.
Do. There's so many places in South America that are incredible, and this is one of them. This salt flat, and I know a lot of people talk about it, but I had never heard of anyone like doing anything like this there, and that it's beautiful.
That had to be quite an undertaking to put that all together.
I think
I immediately started thinking how to film that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, but very, very neat.
You know what? One of the best parts is there's a scene where you can tell the drone is like zooming in and the drone actually crashes.
Oh,
and
wow.
they kept it.
It happens.
Like it splashed, like goes clunk and then it splashes and they kept it. Like they could have edited that out.
Right.
But they must have thought it was awesome and funny and they kept it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's a drone operator's nightmare, crashing.
Oh, well, man, especially this is a salt flat. And so this is intensely corrosive. That's why I was actually really surprised that a musician would be willing to do this anyway, and all the electronics and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Salt water.
No.
Not good.
No bueno. So, yeah.
That so much cooler.
Drone operator was probably like, oh.
There goes that one.
Yeah.
Every drone operator crashed a drone or two.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
I guess it goes with the territory.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. My next cool sheet is a book. This is Testimony by Robbie Robertson. So first of all, I love rock biographies. I read a lot of them. And this one is very good. Robbie Robertson, for those listening who do not know, he was the guitarist, chief songwriter for the band. I've always loved the band, but I really did not know a lot about them until I read this book. And Testimony, it is an autobiography, which is great because Robbie is a great storyteller, and this is in part due to the fact that he grew up on the Six Nations Indian Reserve in Canada, and he was captivated by the storytelling of the elders, and that's kind of really formed his songwriting with the band, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. A lot of those songs are very descriptive. And it really comes through in the telling of his story, too. And he had a fascinating coming of age as a teenager. He was playing with Ronnie Hawkins and the Hawks, traveling through the South, playing clubs in New York and Canada. And, you know, then he talks about being the first band to go electric with Dylan. And it almost broke up the band because they got tired of going out every night and being booed as an artist, like just people screaming at them. But they persevered. The band, went on to be quite successful into the 70s, culminating with the Last Waltz album and film, which is fantastic. You should check that out, too. But the great thing about this is the storytelling of his upbringing and his family, because his mother being Native American and his father being Jewish, and parts of his family had ties to the Jewish mob. So very fascinating story as an individual and a musician and artist. So check it out. Testimony by Robbie Robertson.
Whoa, I got to do one. I wasn't ready.
I know. You were just kicking back.
I was. I was enjoying that story. I need to read more rock biographies. I need to read more. I saw that. Heard that.
I thought you were just going to. I need to read
more. Period.
He tells this really great story in the very early 60s. Ronnie Hawkins booked them for several weeks at a club in Texas called the Starlight Lounge. And so they're traveling by station wagon and trailer, and they pull up and there's this club and there's no roof because there had been a fire. And so the roof is missing, but somehow the club is still in operation.
Wow.
And at first they thought nobody is going to come here. Like who's going to come to this club? But people started to show up, and it was famous because there was a one-armed go-go dancer that would come out to dance and try to get people in the crowd to come out and dance as well, too. And they had to leave members of the band behind to guard the equipment at night.
Whoa.
And then he goes on later to say
so cool.
that the owner was really eccentric, and they thought he was really quite off. But it turns out that the owner of the club was Jack Ruby. And so then a year later, then they found out, oh, okay.
Wow.
Starting
Jeez.
To make a little bit
That's
of sense.
Crazy.
Isn't it?
Yeah. See, this is why I need to read more.
Yes. That is amazing.
Oh, great. Well, should I go? I'll go. And then we'll talk about that. My second cool sheet is a workout routine or maybe a workout philosophy, something like that. And it's called Grease in the Groove or GTG. So I love the name. I love everything about this. Essentially, it is instead of doing one workout session for 30 minutes straight or 20 or an hour or doing whatever, it's breaking up your exercise throughout the day, doing lighter weight, and so it can be body weight exercises or just lower volume of weight, and doing it throughout the day. I first heard about this actually from Ben Greenfield, who does it a lot, talks about it a lot, but it actually originated from Pavel, I can never say his last name. You know Pavel. If you know what a kettlebell is, that's because of Pavel. So he's the Russian weight training expert, and he brought kettlebells to the United States. That's why we have them, is because of him. But he also talks about this greasing the groove, this philosophy of working out. And he has five principles. It's specific to a single movement. For example, you might grease the groove program focused on pull-ups, or you could do push-ups or things like that. The weights are light. You're usually working with a resistance that's light enough for you to do as many as 50 repetitions, but you don't do them all at once. Again, it's broken up throughout the day. The total training volume is very high, so often in the order of 5 to 20 sets per day every day. So it's these little increments. And the sets are spread out across your day. You rest at least 15 to 30 minutes in between. You can do longer. And you don't go to the point of fatigue. So I just like this because if you're super busy, so I have kettlebells, and now I just put up a pull-up bar around my apartment, and I just grab them and do them every once in a while. So go ahead and grease the groove.
Shoo, shoo.
I like it.
Awesome.
I also like the acronym, the G2G.
G-D-G.
Like good to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Grease in the groove. And there's, of course, on Instagram, hashtag grease in the groove.
Uh-huh.
Probably mostly about this. Could be other things. Use caution.
Yeah, right.
When searching for that
it's one of
hashtag.
Things. Man, I know.
Be careful on your Google search.
Exactly. You're like, oh.
I don't know if I want
that's
to
different
in that.
Than what I thought he was talking about.
That's great.
And there's a lot of scientific evidence mm-hmm. And studies of why this is actually better for you. I didn't really want to get into that. I just wanted to talk about what it is exactly. But, you know, you can lift more frequently. You're doing it throughout the day. It's easier on your body. And also that whole – when you go to the gym, you have to get dressed. You have to drive or commute or bike somehow, walk to the gym, then work out, then shower, then come home. I mean, it's a big investment. And a lot of the times I think those are a lot of barriers for people of working out. For me, I know it is.
Or you're waiting for somebody to get done.
Yeah, you're waiting on the machine.
Yeah.
And there's so many variables that you can easily make as excuses. But they are. Some of them are true. This is just constantly doing this. And I used to do it a lot more than I do now. But I'm going to get back on the GTG.
Yeah, you are. No, I love it. Yeah, because I've gotten more into the HIIT, you know, where it's short and stuff.
Right.
And this reminds me of that. And really, it is like you were saying, it's whatever you can do to make it fit into your lifestyle or whatever's happening. So, yes, if on the days you are busy, this can be inserted. But there also might be days when you're not so busy and you do want to do an hour long thing. And that's cool, too. So you can just kind of.
Yeah, and variety's always good.
Yeah.
You know, just doing variety of workout routines.
Yes. And I also love any options there are to do things at home where you don't have to go.
Yeah, because also the gym is expensive.
Yes.
Not everybody can afford the gym.
This is true.
For sure. And things like, you know, so say you do invest in kettlebell or certain weights, which you don't even have to do because body weight, there's so many workouts with body weight.
Yeah.
You actually don't need anything. But if you do want to get something, you think about it like, I don't know how much a kettlebell costs, but I'm sure it's less than a month at the gym or the same.
Yeah.
And then in a month you've paid for
it.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're pretty versatile. You can do all kinds of different exercises with them. They're pretty efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Very nice.
Cool.
I like it. And I have not heard of that.
Oh, good.
I always like it when I haven't heard of something. All right. My next cool sheet is something that is, it's super, as far as I know, super millennial combined with nerdy, combined with hilarious and true. And this is the alignment grid that comes from Dungeons and Dragons. So I have never played Dungeons and Dragons myself. I've just always kind of seen people from afar and talking about their wizards and characters and whatever. But what has happened in the last couple months is I have seen lots of millennials that I am around, because that includes, well, it includes my students and then my kids or whatever's after millennial. Anyway, that there is this alignment scheme where in Dungeons & Dragons, apparently this is used to figure out who your character is. And now people are taking this and they are applying it to all these personalities and things around them. So now you're seeing it in popular culture. So just as a little grid, this includes anything that's people who are fall into this lawful realm or chaotic realm. So these, you know, generally you could say people who are organized or people who are disorganized. And then there's the scheme of good versus evil. So, and this doesn't need to be like evil doesn't necessarily have to mean like pure evil demons like it is in Dungeons and Dragons. But anyway, so now this is being applied to all sorts of things. You see it come up when people are describing TV shows like The Walking Dead. They'll invoke this alignment scheme from D&D. You'll see it where, oh, I don't know, students are describing their professors. And they're and that's where I was like, wait, I'm what? And so if you see that, if you start hearing this chaotic or lawful chaotic or whatever, this is where it comes from. And it is super interesting. And it is kind of funny, the alignment scheme.
So what are you?
Well, depends on who you ask, but I have come up as, let's see, chaotic neutral and chaotic good.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I still don't really know what that means, but I mean, it's, you're not organized.
Well, it does mean that, but it means that I'm not always following by the rules, so that falls into the rebel category.
Oh, you're punk rock. That makes perfect sense.
See?
All right.
And also, I was kind of when the one group said, "Oh, you're chaotic neutral," and I was like, "That's lame."
Nobody wants to be neutral.
No one wants to be neutral. But then I found out
it's
more
asymmetric illusion
what
thing.
It means, and it's kind of like you're like, "Oh, in this situation, I'm gonna do this, but in this situation, I'm gonna do this." So it does mean you're flexible.
All right.
So I was like, "Okay, all right, I can go with that."
Yeah, I like it.
So it's kind of fun.
Okay. My next cool sheet is a local Salem band, The Arbor. The Arbor are a relatively new band in Salem, and I just love these guys. So they consist of Lindsay, and forgive me if I get this wrong, Uloa on vocals, Brett Cowan on guitar, Ryan Halverson on bass, and Jake Jones on drums. So they originally started out as a duo. Lindsay was a late addition to Make Music Day, like literally days before the event. And she was assigned to play in front of the now closed restaurant, The Arbor, over on High Street. And guitarist Brett Cowan was playing there just before Lindsay's set or vice versa. And that's how they met. And so then they decided they liked what each other was doing. So they started out as an acoustic duo. And that's how they chose the name The Arbor. It represents where they met. So then Ryan and Jake later joined on. And the duo is now a full-on band. They're no longer acoustic. They're amplified. But the band is really high energy. They write really great songs. Lindsay is just an amazing vocalist. And Brett is an incredible guitar player. And combined with this really rock solid rhythm section of Ryan and Jake, they have a really great sound. It's very distinctive. They just released their first EP, All at Once. It contains 6 original songs. It is available on iTunes, Bandcamp. They're also on Spotify. I recommend going to one of their live shows and picking up a CD of All at Once. They are really great live. So check out the band, The Arbor.
Cool.
I've never heard of them. I'm going to listen.
They're very good. They're very good. Yeah.
I love the story, too. I always love these stories behind how things are the name of a band and the story behind all of
And they're all really young, and she's super high energy.
Oh, cool.
So they're fun to see live. And I really can't say enough about the EP. It's really good. I was listening to it on the way in here.
Excellent. All right.
Got you in the pledge mood. The cool sheets mood.
All right.
Cool. All right. Well, let me go ahead and go get one more out at least. My next cool sheet is some fitness equipment. So I talked about Grease in the Groove a little, just my last cool sheet. And this is kind of some supplements for that. But it's also for standing desks. First, sitting at your desk was the new cigarettes. And then there started becoming all these studies because more people started using standing desks that, oh, maybe they're not as good as we thought. Better than sitting, but not great. What's the reason for this? It's because you're still standing. And if you're locked-kneed in one place still for 6 hours, 4 hours, 2 hours, it's just not good for you to keep doing that all the time every day. So I got these two kind of supplement tools or exercise equipment that I can do at my desk. And one is a balance board. So it's a round ball with a flat platform on top, and you stand on it and it wiggles around like crazy. And when you first get on it, it's really hard to stay balanced. But after a while, you get really good at it. And then you can kind of just zen out and hover over. And it's really cool. It makes you feel really neat that you're balancing like that. I was never, as a kid, I was good at balancing. You know, you'd always walk on the curb and practice all the time your balancing skills, at least I did. And then I kind of lost that. So it's also got me better at that. And then the other one I have is a really big, thick piece of foam. The links will be in our show notes. And this, you stand on it, and it's not just for cushioning. It's so deep and flexible that it's, they always describe it, and I like this, as like you're standing in kind of a rice paddy. Like it's all squishy, and it's just, it feels really cool when you go barefoot, if you want to freak out your coworkers and work barefoot, but it feels really neat. But it works on your stabilization muscles, and it keeps you this kind of movement. And it's really good for you. You're GTG in it, and it's better for you on your standing desk. So check them out.
Shoo, shoo.
Ooh, I like those. Brian, I can't believe you're just now talking about that platform. You've had that forever.
Forever.
Like
I've had
two
it
or
for
three years.
A few years at least.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
And I have other people that have gotten it in the office.
Oh,
because
that's
of
great.
Me. The foam one. They're still a little freaked out. They'll come into my office and they'll get on the wobble board and they'll be like, and they start talking to me. They're like, what the? And then I get on it to show off and I'm just like flat. And they're like, all right, I'm leaving. They show up.
I love it.
But it's cool.
So have you ever crashed on it?
Well, I have crashed, but it's a very low impact crash. You just kind of step off of it. So that's good. It's very safe.
I love the sound of that. It's semicircle kind of. Is it
the foam pad?
The foam pad one?
No, mine's square. You can get them square,
oh, square.
Or
oh, okay.
Rectangular.
But
I love it. I love that more because it still works all your stabilization muscles,
yes,
and joints and things like that, which I feel like would be better for running, mm-hmm, and things like that. You wouldn't twist an ankle as much if you have these a little bit stronger. I don't know if that's science or not, but I feel like it is. And that's all that really matters, the placebo of it.
Very true.
Maybe. Anyway, yeah, I really like it. That's my favorite one.
Yes.
I use that a lot more than the balance board. I should probably use the balance board, wobble board, whatever it's called, more. But I like just the rice paddy.
Yeah. I want to stand in a rice paddy.
Yeah, I've never been. So I close my eyes and think about doing that.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're great.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cool Sheets. You can find out more about all the cool sheets we listed by going to our website, coolsheets.cool, and looking for the links.
That's coolsheets.cool. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Leave comments for us on Facebook or email us at info@coolsheets.cool. Bye.